bought me a ring, falling asleep, the sound of your breathing, wide, wide eyes like, this is my house, this is my life now, this is my spouse. Glory be, glory to you, glory to me, this is the sound of holy love.
Holding. Honey, I know how much you love a shopping spree.
I love to shop. Till I drop.
I mean, you are a woman after all.
Okay, well.
And so, I'm just kidding. This is stupid. I found a once-in-a-lifetime shopping opportunity for you.
Okay.
And I'm going to show you in real time.
Oh, my God. Oh, okay. My God. Okay.
So, apparently.
I'm so excited.
Mardi Gras, which is a strip club in Springfield, Massachusetts. It's like a local institution, is closing its doors.
No.
After like 40 years in business.
Oh, that's sad. And
so they have
stuff for sale.
They're auctioning off all their stuff.
Stop
it. So just tell me if you want any, and you have to describe them because the people listening can't see them.
My
So tell
God.
Me if there's anything that sings to you.
Okay, well, first I'm seeing a snowplow. A snowplow.
I wanted that one, unrelated to the club closing down, but let's ignore that one. But okay. Moving right along. I don't know what the snowplow had to do with the strip club, but it's okay.
The first thing that I see that I absolutely have to have is a turquoise neon light in like the perfect font that just says table dancing.
Yes, it's like turquoise with purple stars, and it looks like it's 3.5 feet by 2 feet.
I want it. I want that in our house.
I want it too. And there's also a big neon sign. And also, by the way, the table dancing neon sign, that the current bid is $510.
That's reasonable.
I think so too. There's also this one, the Kino neon sign. Uh-huh. I think that's also amazing.
That one would be great.
I would love that. There's another neon sign that says cigars.
Cigars.
There's a lovely vintage crystal chandelier.
Oh.
And I found a quote actually regarding that chandelier. The woman who runs the auction said, "The things that get more attention, like the chandelier, if someone walks in your house, they'll say, 'Where did you get that?' And then you've got a cool story."
You do have a cool story.
Right? There's some other things. Oh, by the way, there's an actual...
A wrought iron swinging door, swinging gate. Wow.
This is the proper attire.
Proper attire.
Yep, uh-huh. The proper attire required. There's also the actual stage, the big octagon shape. It's like $39.
My God.
There's a player piano.
Oh, my God. I want a player piano.
$170. Also, these are all stripper poles. All of these.
Beautiful.
97-inch spinning exotic dancer pole.
Honestly, I would love to learn how to be on a pole.
I mean, honestly, right? I feel like this is a treasure trove.
There's so much cool stuff. What is that? A sun and moon? What is that? A sun and moon thing?
That's what I'm saying. There's also inexplicably a treadmill on this list.
Love it.
And there's also a health-o-meter, medical scale, laundry appliances, commercial flyers, upholsters, sofas from the club's private room. Just imagine the stories those could tell, right?
That's a centerpiece.
A stand-up tanning booth that was apparently in the dressing room.
Everybody needs one. In the year 2050, they'll be in everybody's homes.
Yep. Y'all just go to adams.bidwrangler.com. I have nothing to do with this auction, but there's 300 items, and I just feel like y'all need to see this. Honestly, though, the table dancing sign, I want it. If we had just a spare, like, $600 laying around, you better believe. Anyway.
I feel like I deserve it.
I can see the wheels turn. You're actually sort of thinking
about
this.
I really, really want the table dancing sign.
Or how about the big stage? It's like an octagon-shaped stage with, like, Mardi Gras masks, like the, you know, and, like, Mardi Gras beads.
That's going to be my tour setup. I'm inspired from Coachella.
And you could put the table dancing sign behind.
I know.
You already know.
I'm so excited.
Okay.
Well, I'm really glad we have a new sign coming.
Oh, my God. Me too.
They have a walk-in cooler.
Oh, and a meat slicer.
Parts only.
Oh, well, you know, a mixed lot, which contains popcorn boxes.
Mixed lot.
4 boxes of Green Mountain coffee. A fertilizer spreader. Why do they need that?
I love a mixed lot.
Okay, anyway.
Wow.
Okay, so welcome, everyone. We are... Go ahead, please.
You go ahead.
No, I feel like I just took up enough space.
No, I looked at the calendar and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe we're on schedule. We literally did a week on, a week off. This is perfect. And then I looked closer and I was like, nope.
And you realize the
truth. We're still a week late.
Yep, we're a week
late.
Well,
you know.
things happened. It was spring break. We've
had a really, really busy month.
I mean, it wasn't spring break.
Every month is so busy.
That's right. This is one of my obsessions, but we went to Minneapolis for NACA. I think we recorded right before we went to that. I think.
I can't remember.
I can't either. Yeah. We went to Minneapolis to kind of take this dog and pony show and see if anybody would be interested in investing in it. And then we went to Kansas. We performed at the University of Kansas, which was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, massive shout out to Meg.
Massive shout out to Meg, Patreon supporter Meg. That was just such a ridiculously perfect experience. It was just a transcendent night and kind of reaffirmed for me like why we do this podcast and why we take the show on the road. And, you know, it also always reminds me also of this, like, how many lives you've touched with your music and getting to hear from people who can share their stories with you. And, you know, it's just neat. Like, I'm just so lucky that I get to do this.
I feel really lucky, too. I if anything, I think it was just such an affirming show. I totally agree. I feel like it was, you know, like, we went to NACA, so it's the National Association for Campus Activities, as I think we said on a previous episode, and, you know, it's like, it kind of costs a lot to go and to do it, and we didn't even get picked for a showcase, so, like, we were just pretty much there just at our booth, just being like, hi, we're us.
Yeah.
And like, we do this really weird thing. Do you want us to come to your school?
And explaining it to people who are just like totally blank slates is incredibly challenging.
It's like, so hard, the elevator pitch.
But then I realized when we were in Kansas, I was like, I turned to Mary after the show and I was like, I just realized I don't know if what we do like translates well to NACA. I don't think it does. I think like the people that we are talking to are like such a, like, it's such a specific group of people and it's not meant to appeal to, like, the huge, broader campus community because we're talking about how to survive within that system.
Right.
If you, you know, belong to these particular identity categories. So, I don't know. It was, but it was also, like, I don't regret that we did it and we met some really cool people and everything, but.
Yes. And I still think it's, I honestly think it was a good investment and I feel like it is. Yeah, we made some great connections and, you know.
It's just kind of hard being, like, being in between, like, a magician and like a guy who reads people's minds, and we're sitting there being like, "So we talk about suicide attempts and being gay." You know, it was a little challenging, but I think the more opportunities that we have to like talk about what we do, and you know, like I always say about this podcast, one of the reasons I'm really proud of it is like, I know you have tons of connections and all this like media experience, and like you know, experience being in the spotlight and communicating. And all these different platforms and across all these different media. But, like, we did this completely from the ground up, completely by ourselves, not having any idea what we were doing. I'd never done anything like this before.
We still don't know what we're doing.
We still don't know. I actually refuse to ever learn what I'm doing. And we're not, like, part of, like, a network. We don't have anybody promoting us. Like, this is some grassroots shit. And I think a lot of that might have to do with the fact that, like, I think the number of people with, like, the overlapping identity categories that we talk about is kind of small. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's really that small. I think there's a ton of people we can reach. But anyway, I mean.
Well, and I think what got me excited about performing at colleges in the first place, which is, like, what I always loved about visiting colleges and universities is, like, that is the demographic that I wish I had known someone like me. Yeah. I wish I had known that, like, a marriage like ours was possible, that a life like this was possible, that, you know, bipolar didn't mean that you were going to suffer for the rest of your fucking life.
Yeah, absolutely.
That, like, that you know, there is mobility. You know what I mean? Like, there is movement. There's something beyond that cloud of darkness that can sometimes sit upon you. And I feel like, especially in college or at around that time, it can feel really suffocating.
Yeah.
And I wonder how, you know, kids are feeling right now. Like, I imagine the despair is just like peak despair. And I feel like being able to have role models that, you know, encompass your same identities it's important. It's important to see that. And I think that's what we kept hearing over and over again was like, I didn't know that that was possible.
Absolutely.
And seeing you two up there, like, loving each other the way you do and, you know, talking about things the way that you do was, like, really moving for me and it gave me hope. And I think, like, that's if we can do anything, like, that's it.
I agree. I think so, too. And I hadn't really even thought about that until someone who, you know, was at the show talked about that, said, like, it's not just, like, what y'all are talking about. It's what you're enacting. It's what your relationship kind of looks like and the support that you offer each other in front of everyone, you know? And I hadn't really thought of that, but I think it's really fucking cool. And I love playing music with you. And we tried some new things on this show that I don't know if we would replicate. I was like, just like a couple of weeks ago, I had this like wild hair up my ass where I was like, you should go out there first and start playing and then I'll come out afterwards. But then it was weird because it made it seem like I was like some, like I was sort of the main attraction. And also like I didn't know when to enter. So I sort of like walked out in the middle of a song. It was a fucking disaster.
Yeah, but that was messy.
But it was my idea. And now you know what? I can cross that.
Like, nope, we should walk out together.
Yes. And it's both of us doing a show.
And but it was a good to try. It was like, you know, we tried something.
And you also, you walked out by yourself and you were like, I kicked Wyatt off of the Manic episodes and I was like, I wonder if people are really going to be like, oh shit, did they get in a fight?
Oh God.
You should actually, next time you should do that and be like, we broke up right before this and like start crying.
No.
And then I'll come out right afterwards and be like, da 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 da.
No. Too scary.
Do you want to tell your first lie?
I want to lie.
Go ahead and lie, baby.
Okay.
Lie like it's the last lie of your life.
Hey.
Hey. Pachuco.
Do you know what really gets my goat?
What?
I think it's rude that goats aren't allowed to play volleyball.
Yeah, actually.
For at least 100 years, the Alliance to Allow Goats to Play Volleyball, the ATAGTPV, has been denied access for long enough. And frankly, it's disturbing. And we just wanted to bring some light that Trisha has, Trisha's, you know, spearheading the new campaign called
Thank God.
Let us volleyball. Let us play.
You know,
good job, Trisha.
And she's a very busy person.
She's got a lot on her plate.
The fact that she has time for that is really inspiring, sweetie.
Yes.
Keep doing what you're doing, girl. Just keep kicking ass and taking names. Oh, sorry. Okay, Mary just got very mad and covered
you
up her
next lie.
You keep
looking at my screen.
I'm just trying to figure out when it's going to be over.
That's so cool.
Stop trolling me, honey.
Oh, okay.
Joshua has developed a new device that for now it only works on in the real world plane of existence, but it's a troll protection device.
Oh.
Like the little creatures that live under bridges and make you pay troll tolls.
Oh.
And it's basically, Joshua's patented like a force field, and I can't say too much because it's proprietary, but soon you won't even have to worry about trolls, period, no matter what the realm. Like, internet, real life, and it will even protect you from trolls in your dreams.
Wow. Yeah. But we don't know.
I can't describe it yet. I know because,
it's
me.
Yeah.
You know?
You gotta pay the troll toll to get in.
Love that reference.
Say, love, do you want a spot of tea then?
I want a spot of tea then, governor. I would love a spot of tea.
Do you want someone to bring it to you as a bad British accent and is just like a mischievous butler?
No.
Introducing Step to Steep, a butler service that has been started by Rain. Congratulations, Rain, to all your endeavors.
Rain.
And Step to Steep.
So wait, what did they develop? It's a butler
company
that just steeps your tea for you? We didn't really fully let this idea cook, did we?
I just wanted to I just wanted to speak like this, love.
And you got me to try out by like...
I really need a troll. I need a troll force field right now, Joshua.
Look at this connection. Well, it gave me an excuse to try my like 16-syllable long... Anyway, British people. This all seems a little arbitrary, doesn't it?
Mm-mm. Sorry.
Fran O took their considerable agricultural skills and marketing prowess and opened a company called Arbitrary Berries.
Oh, cute.
They sell a huge variety of berries in sealed, opaque containers that surprise the person buying them.
Oh.
The principle that you have to accept is that all berries are essentially the same, and it's also arbitrary that you shouldn't care what berries come in it.
Arbitrary berries.
You like it? It's just a rhyme that I took too far.
I love it. That's what you have to do.
Yeah. You like it, though, really.
That's beautiful.
Thank you, honey. Cheer. You know what? Clap for us.
You know what?
Cheerio.
Please no, I'm clap. Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't do it anymore.
Do it forever.
We have a lot that I want to talk about. Well, there's Please. Just so much to talk about. Well,
yeah,
I,
let's go.
I feel like there's just a fuck ton going on politically. I feel like there's a lot going on. Like, I mean, I feel like anytime you open your phone up, it's just like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. And I think this really weird, like, double talk that conservative Republicans do about freedom is really fucking annoying uh-huh. and criminal and cruel and bullshit.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so I kind of wanted to talk about it.
Let's do it. I love this as a topic. I'm ready to dive right in.
What do you like? What do you like about it? Tell me.
Tell me why you think it's such a good idea.
Tell me why you think I'm so good.
I'm thinking about this topic and about the concept of freedom a lot lately for a couple of reasons. First, as you said, it is, you know, I'm watching with the same concern and distress and sense of impending doom that a lot of queer people are. I'm, you know, kind of watching the political landscape shifting to this like super reactionary anti-queer, anti-trans, you know, kind mm-hmm. of position. So there's that. So I'm thinking about freedom in that way, because I mean, as you say, it's this like classic sort of conservative, like talking out of the both sides of one's mouth about, mm-hmm. you know, the right to individual expression and the right to freedom from government censorship and control, while they're, you know, trying to enact that very thing in the name of protecting children, which is a canard and they know it.
Right.
So that's distressing. But also, I'm thinking about it from another perspective, because I'm reading this book right now by Anthony Carnival, Peter Schmidt, and Jeff Stroll called The Merit Myth. And it is about the subtitle is How Our Colleges Favor the Rich and Divide America.
Mm.
And the thesis of their book is that there are these two competing American values that are incredibly difficult to reconcile when it comes to big policy positions, like especially something like education, which is something that like we all agree is an important part of a democratic society, but it's actually not enshrined in the Constitution. Like, it's not in the Constitution right. or any of our founding documents that we have to provide, like, public education, right?
Right?
So we're taking that sort of on faith or just out of tradition. But the two competing values are, like, a commitment to promoting individual liberty
mm-hmm.
and a sense of, like, a, you know, a collective sort of democratic good, right? That yeah. we should, like, preserve these, like, democratic institutions. Those mm-hmm. are, like, at odds with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm interested because I think that's also what you're seeing coming into conflict in with these queer anti-trans anti-queer bills, but just in a different way.
Mm.
Because I think you're seeing that like very often those two things are like totally illegible when you when they're in conflict with each other. Like it's really hard to separate them.
Mm.
So, I think the very idea that you can, it feels to me like they've sort of found a loophole. So I'll get back to the book about college later because I don't think it's unrelated, but it feels to me like they found a loophole with this queer and trans stuff where they're like, oh, if we just say that it's about protecting children,
right,
then nothing else matters.
Totally.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter that we're infringing on people's freedom of expression.
Right.
It doesn't matter that we are trying to police free speech or play the moral police or ban books or any of these other things because
right.
it's all under the guise of protecting children.
Right.
But I can't phrase to you how fucking irritating it is to me that is the guise. Like, that's
yes,
the... like
I completely agree.
Because
yeah.
if you... And it's by design because
yeah.
if you purport that to be a ruse,
mm-hmm.
then you are okay with grooming children.
Yes.
But it's a neat trick. Like, I have to give them credit because it seemed like after, you know, Roe versus Wade gets overturned, it's like, well, fuck, what's going to be the culture war thing? But it's like, actually, this has been steeping for a while.
Yeah.
And there are, like, as I've always complained about, Republicans have no economic policy. They have no forward-looking policy ideas. They have no answers. They have no original thoughts. This is all they have. This is
right.
This is their chew toy, is this
right.
culture war kind of shit. And so we get to hear about people who have never met a trans person in their fucking lives.
Right.
Talk about how important it is that they get the proper psychological treatment before they begin fucking hormones.
Right.
Like, you give a fuck.
Totally.
So anyway, excuse me. I can feel like my veins bulging out of my
neck. Well, no.
But yeah, it's frustrating. I feel like we've been talking about this same shit my entire life. Like,
yes.
It's just really frustrating.
I agree. And I think what I think pisses me off the most is like, is it about children's safety or is it about freedom? Which one is it? Because
yeah.
Like, because where does gun reform fit in any of this? Like, if it's about freedom, then like, where's the bot? You want autonomy to be able to have as many guns as you want,
yeah.
But not so people can make really personal, intimate decisions about their own bodies or like their children.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, that's the whole, I thought that the, you know, at least some conservatives had this sort of like libertarian kind of perspective on issues like this. Well,
right.
I guess not like actual conservatives, but that's where I thought we were. Like, that's where I thought conservatives sort of were, is like, just keep the government out of it. But like I said, it's a clever little loophole. It's a loophole where you can be like, everybody should be free to do whatever they want unless you're talking about my children. And then you need to get the fuck away from my children. And
right.
It's like, I have been to, it must be a niche of a niche of a niche of a sliver of a niche. So like, even if I had a problem with, for example, drag performers being around kids, I cannot even begin to tell you in my, 20 plus years of being an out queer person, how many drag shows I've been to in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I'm sorry to say, drag queens, not by choice, but because like, you're in a bar and all of a sudden the drag show starts. I have never been around a drag queen where there's been a child present.
Yeah.
Not once, not one time. I've never seen it. So what you're seeing is they'll carefully curate, because we live in a big country with a lot of people and a lot of things happening.
Yeah.
So they'll curate these little stories of, did you know there was a drag queen twerking at this library in, you know, Eufaulia buttfuck, Oregon? And there was a kid in the crowd. Did you see that? Did you see that? Do you really want that? Do you like that? And then what are you supposed to say, right?
Yeah, right.
So it's all like, it all to me, and yet, like, if you were to pull that same sleight of hand with an issue that conservatives hold dear, they would never tolerate it, right?
Right, totally.
And if you respond by like, well, what do you say about, for example, the Catholic Church, which has done a better job of protecting child abusers than any institution on the planet, mm-hmm. they'll be like, well, that's not blah, 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 you know? Like,
totally.
It's really, really frustrating.
I 100% agree.
If I legitimately thought that that were an actual threat,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I would be a good enough person to be like, guys, we got to do something about this.
Yeah.
This is really bad. This
totally.
Is exposing kids to some real... And I have not been like in lockstep with the LGBTQ community consensus on every single issue,
mm-hmm.
I don't think. Like,
yeah.
I feel like politically I'm willing to, you know, plant my flag in the ground where it's unpopular. I mean, like, you know that you and I sort of disagree on issues related to like free speech and things like
mm-hmm.
that, and I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I would feel totally confident being like, I got to part with my people on this one.
Yeah.
But there's no there.
No.
It's really weird.
I think it probably happened with like Drag Queen Story Hour. They were really upset about that, of like, that's confusing to children, explaining
right.
drag or something like that. Or that this idea that it's a new thing is also really weird to me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, drag has been around for fucking ever.
Yes.
Like, drag is Shakespeare. Like,
yeah,
drag
absolutely.
Is like, you know, on like White Christmas, like you know, fucking what's his name? Dean Martin, one of the old guys that they like.
Oh, are we talking about like Something Like It Hot?
Yes. Yeah. No, but in White Christmas too, they
oh,
do
shit.
It.
Yeah, that's right.
They,
yeah,
like, I mean, it's like, it's so common, and it's like, it's a gag. Like, it's funny. It's camp. You
I don't
know?
Remember like, anybody being like, oh my God, I loved Robin Williams, but just anything but that grooming in Mrs. Doubtfire where
honestly.
She was around those children. Like,
seriously.
So I think it's frustrating too, like, coming from this community and having it be like, my whole background, like, a huge part of the formation of my worldview came from being around queer people and like being around drag queens. And like, I know I've talked about like, you know, Thomas being one of the, you know, formative influences my whole life. And then having these, like, people out of absolutely nowhere mm-hmm. pretend to care about yeah. it and pretend to know about it and pretend to be invested. Where I'm like, can yeah. you please, please mind your own business? Like, yeah. please, for the love of God. And like, so I think it's unfortunate that I really do think it's once same-sex marriage was legalized, mm-hmm. that I think removed a huge piece of red meat away from conservatives. Mm-hmm. They hated that.
Yeah.
And they kind of had to give up. Like, yeah. that sort of fizzled out. Like, yeah. I don't think you really hear any meaningful opposition to same-sex marriage anymore. Like, maybe in little pockets, but not really.
Yeah.
So that red meat's gone. And then the abortion red meat is gone, because it's like, well, y'all kind of won on that, right? Yeah. And I know that a lot of GOP, like, strategists are kind of freaked out about that, because it's been such an effective rallying point for liberals, right?
Yeah.
So this is what they have. And yeah. so... even in, like, I there's a, even, like, an anti-trans bill in California. There was one proposed in Maine. There have been, like, there's no geographic limitation to this. Yeah. And I don't remember what the number was on how many, like, anti-trans or, like, anti-drag pieces of legislation there are. But that's, like, the meme now.
It's bonkers.
Like, it's really noxious. And it won't, unfortunately for conservatives, it won't solve anything, because there wasn't a meaningful problem to begin with.
Right.
And you wouldn't know if it solved anything, because you're not really paying attention, because you don't give a shit. So
you said something really interesting. So it was after our Kansas, our University of Kansas show, and you had a really interesting thing. We were just, you know, just talking, like, unwinding after unpacking everything. And you said the issue is that the world is happening around conservatives, and they don't know what to do with it, because we're so hyper visible now, and queer people are more visible than we've ever been.
Right.
And they feel lost. They're like, the whole world is moving on without us. We feel really confused. And so the only way they can see queer people or drag or trans people is through this lens of, like, perversion or weird sex stuff, because most of, like, yeah. the conservative Republicans that are, like, in these really deep, nasty pockets of America are, like, they're bad people.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. those are the groomers. Those are the pedophiles.
Yes.
And so they think that everybody is looking through a lens of pedophilia.
Right.
When they see drag, they see something really nefarious.
Yeah, because, really sinister. Yeah.
Yes. And I think it's really sad.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think...
I don't mean to paint everything in such a broad brush, but I'm telling you, the worst interactions that I've had with people are, like, that have, you know, either assaulted me or made me feel extremely uncomfortable or violated me in some way have been conservative white men, you know?
I mean, you can't help but... our whole community is being painted with a broad brush, and not just painted with a broad brush, but actually, like, actively being criminalized with a broad brush. Yes. By people who don't understand it. So I don't really have a problem doing that. That I think has to be somewhere in the sort of, like, religious conservative rights mind. They have to know on some level, even if they won't admit it, maybe if they'll only to themselves, you know, while, like, in the shower or, like, going to sleep in those quiet inner moments, be like, have to know that, you know, criminalizing drag is not going to meaningfully reduce the number of children who are sexually abused or assaulted, which mm-hmm. I think, like, the vast majority of the time is a result of people who know the child or are close to the child mm-hmm. or the child's family members, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like almost always.
Yeah.
And is, you know, like, that's usually what it's a function of, that totally. It's not something that you can attribute to one particular, like, demographic group or one community, right? Yeah. Like, there has to be some acknowledgement of that I don't know if they know that it's just, like, a political talking point, you know, and, like, just, like, a political kind of cudgel rather than something that they're just, you know, it's a place where they can lash out. I don't know, but it's gotten, like, exponentially worse than I thought it was going to get, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Well, when I was reflecting, I was like, conservatives aren't into protecting children. They're safeguarding their own comfort. And I feel like that's what we're seeing legislated. I feel like it is like, how do I continue seeing the world that I want to see that makes sense to me and that is legible to me? And I don't want even for a moment to have my child have any discomfort. Yeah. I don't want, and I think there's this idea that if you have new ideas or something is, you know, not of the norm or not the main, you know, main identity or what fucking ever, that it creates some sort of weird mind fuckery. But like, queer people always exist. Queer people will always exist.
Yeah.
And I think this idea that like you can criminalize queerness is like, it's a fool's errand. Like, they're gonna have questions no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, and what better way to do that than with joy and with something that's not sinister or nefarious?
Right.
And also, like, trans kids exist. Like, whose kids are you protecting? You know, I think it's just such a, it's so heartbreaking when I think about all of the kids that are out there that are really trying to just understand themselves and not even having the latitude to even express that.
Yeah. And I think too, like, if there are conversations to be had, I think it's a conversation to be had, like, within the queer community or like within the, you know, medical providers who work with parents and their kids, like, mm-hmm. sure. If they want to have conversations about that or like the ethics or that sort of thing, I think that's great. Like, why it needs to be something that needs to be legislated is beyond me. Like,
I agree.
I don't understand. I don't understand why. And if there are questions, I feel like they're likely not really any of my business. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? If there are questions like, or conversations within those communities about like what type of care is best, I don't know. But it certainly seems to me like people who have no access to like actual, like objective research done on these issues, it mm-hmm. just doesn't feel helpful to me to have those people chiming in, you know?
I agree. I don't know. Well, I think you see this in a lot of communities, in a lot of minority communities that are like, hey, please don't make laws without including us in your conversation. You know what I mean? Like, listen to trans kids. Don't make laws protecting people without including them. If you don't include the demographic you're legislating against in your discussions or understanding, then it's not about care or concern. It's about you wanting control and believing that you have the authority to criminalize an identity, or in the case of abortion, criminalizing choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, some of these stories coming up about abortion are like harrowing. And we have, you know, we have a friend that's a doctor in Texas just like being like, I am terrified. I'm terrified I'm going to go to jail. I'm terrified about what I'm supposed to tell my patients.
Yeah.
And like forcing someone to give birth to a child that's dead.
Right.
Like, fuck you. Fuck y'all. Like, this is a product. This is not, you know what? No, this is not a byproduct of this kind of legislation. It is the direct result. It's what they're hoping for.
Yeah, actually, I think you're right. Yeah, the cruelty is the point.
Why? What? In what world? You know, and I think that's what's so just infuriatingly yeah. disgusting to me is, you know, that if their daughter, if their sister, if their mistress, if their girlfriend, if their wife got pregnant and they didn't want to, or they were in that same position, they would have the means and be able to cross state lines to get the necessary care.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And the idea that you would do something different than what you're legislating, I think is just such a fucking disgusting code of ethics.
Like, yeah.
I feel like in the past I've been like, you know, there are two sides, you know, I want to be fair to, you know, different ideas about, you know, laws and government and
policy and
policy.
Things like that.
But it's so like, there, you can't, we can't have a middle ground. There is no conceding a kind of side when people's lives are at stake like this.
Yeah. Oh, I think there's a right side and there's a wrong side. Like, yeah. I'm Absolutely. And I think there are some, you know, I used to really, it depends on the day, it depends on my mood. Like some days where I'm like, there is, you know, maybe there are some ideas about economic policy or taxation or, you know, immigration policy. Like maybe there are conversations to have, but then on some days I'm like, no, you know what? There are at least some issues where it's, I think, like, clearly not negotiable. Like, if you want to live in a civilized society, it's not negotiable. Like, and I think the biggest thing, the biggest issue, and I don't think this is totally unrelated to the trans bans and abortion, all this stuff, is this gross Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
That I think is, like, Christian conservative nationalism, I think, is a different and sort of like more potent force than just conservatism, right? Mm. So something that is sort of inflected with this idea that like Christian values need to be enacted through the laws that we create. I think that because that's, you know, like if you're talking about abortion, you particularly people who are like anti-choice, they have to invoke some kind of abstract ideas about morality that are like outside of liberalism. Like, I mean, like classical liberalism, right? Mm-hmm. Like the importance of individual autonomy. Otherwise, it doesn't really make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of brings me back to when I was talking about this book, The Merit Myth, that I just finished reading, that, you know, the authors really argue like a lot of our national conflict comes down to this clash between the importance of individualism in our country and that, you know, this liberal sort of virtue or value that, you know, the individual is, you know, that you are the captain of your own ship and that you should be able to make individual choices and you shouldn't have those individual choices constrained. And like the idea of republicanism or, you know, democracy where it's like we're all in this together and we're greater than the sum of our parts and, you know, the need for to preserve our republic supersedes all these individual sort of needs and wants. And I think you're seeing that obviously in conflict here where it's like the conservatives feel like they have to call on conservative Christian values to like maintain whatever delusional view of the republic they have as like a Christian nation. Mm. But they think that supersedes individual autonomy, right? Like individual rights. And so I don't even know how philosophically we get through a conversation like this. I don't know how to have a practical conversation with somebody who's talking to me from like the perspective of like religious, like of like Christian nationalism. I don't know how to deal with that. How do you argue with somebody's religious faith? I don't know.
I don't understand. How do you reconcile this idea of doing something that's for the greater good and then also arguing against gun control? Like that's to me, like I think that's what I have a really difficult time squaring is like, how do these seem like two totally opposing views of like freedom to carry the weapon that you want to, you know, what did DeSantis just do? Like you can open carry without a fucking permit in Florida. That's what he wants to do or they have done.
I think that's what they're trying to do. Yeah. They call it constitutional carry, I think. Yes.
How do you reconcile that with what the good of the community is or the good of the...
I think when it comes to like an issue like their purported interest in keeping children safe with the trans stuff, is that what you mean? Versus like the gun laws, I think they see those as being apples and oranges. So they don't see if I'm trying to get into the mind.
Yeah, because you're like the whisperer. Like,
yeah, I think they see that as being like apples and oranges. So they think that for the most part, the Second Amendment, you know, says shall not be abridged and that, you know, the right of the people to bear arms is a fundamental constitutional American right. And that, you know, there are other issues that lead to these mass school shootings, but that guns are not the central issue, I guess. I mean, fuck, I don't know. And they think that they're, fuck. See, I don't even know if I can do this. Like, I'm trying to play devil's advocate. I don't even think I can. And I don't like doing this.
Yeah, but
like,
sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
They think with their issue with the drag bans specifically, the trans issues, they're always, again, it's like they say that it's because they worry that kids are being brainwashed into this sort of gender cult ideology and that they're going to get on hormones that cause irreversible changes to their bodies before they're really old enough to consent to or understand doing it and get, you know, operations that are irreversible and all this kind of stuff. That's the that's what they say that they're concerned about, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how they square that with the gun issue. I think it's they see those as being two totally different sort of arenas. Like they think that also they think like they see like public education is also sort of like because that's a lot of this has to do with education. Because right. They think that public schools have become sort of this arm of brainwashing by like, you know, letting kids go by whatever pronouns they want without telling their teachers, and their teachers will, you know, their teachers are trans and non-binary and we'll have them reading like trans and non-binary literature and they don't like that. So they think that's part of the brainwashing. So like that's, I don't know. I really, it's not a coherent worldview. So you can't make sense of it. It's not an internally consistent system of values to me. I don't think so. But, you know, let me tell you what it sounds like. Like, have you ever heard somebody say, I remember growing up, people would be like, you know, isn't it so hypocritical if you are against the death penalty but you're in favor of abortion? Like, you need to be consistent. Like, pick a side. And, like, anybody with two fucking brain cells to rub together is going to be like, those are two really different things.
Yeah.
Can you mash them together in, like, some kind of a weird mental gymnastics where it's like, I mean, I guess, like, you know, but they're so different. It's mm-hmm. really hard to, like, flatten them into one issue. Mm-hmm. I think that's how conservative okay. people see guns and the trans and that stuff is they see it as being so different that
they see it as like a straw man.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And they don't see the principles applying in both situations, right? So I don't know. I mean, it's to me the biggest it's very clever. I mean, what they've done is very clever and it's very dishonest. But it's a really hard trap to wriggle your way out of. Mm. And again, if the other side of the issue is like you're a child molester, right. How do you begin to have a nuanced conversation about that? You know? And also they will like trot out their own sort of like, because you know.
The Blair Whites of it all.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they will, you know, like run their net through the like, a dirty aquarium that is Twitter and be like, look, we found a bunch of people who were trans and aren't anymore who want to talk about how damaged they are by the gender ideology. Mm-hmm. And so those are their star witnesses. Yeah. So what do you say? Do you invalidate their experiences? Like it's an impossible situation. I think it's difficult to talk about. I think it's difficult. It's doubly difficult to talk about when you have people who fundamentally don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. And the only stories they have access to are horror stories.
Yeah.
And they think that they do have trans people's perspectives and queer people's perspectives because they have these like, you know, insiders in the issue. So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like it's them saying like, well, we understand the black experience because we watch Candace Owens, you know?
Exactly. It's really hard. Yeah.
It's like, no, because These communities of people are not a monolith. And so, of course, there's going to be different experiences. And, of course, like, there are just so many different ways to be queer and to grow up in this world and to be, you know, to be trying to be – to navigate the same thing that the rest of us are.
I mean, I think all you can do is be like – because I don't know shit. All I know is, like, I would say – we have to defer to like best practices in medicine and like within the like practitioners of this shit, right? Yes. Like, so like I defer to their wisdom, and it seems to be like there's a real phenomenon of, you know, your gender and your biological sex not being in concert with each other. And this seems to be from all the medical literature, the best treatment for that issue.
Yeah.
So like I defer to that, right?
Yeah.
But you can't expect, these are people who no longer believe in studies.
Right.
They believe in anecdotes, and they believe in, like you said, these like super politically charged, politically motivated, curated anecdotes that seem to go against the grain of, you know, mainstream narratives.
Yeah.
And you're talking about people who don't believe in like scientific consensus or like the scientific community. They think it's all brainwashing. They think it's all these liberal, politically motivated institutions who are, you know, who are not actually seeking the truth, but are, you know, I mean, they don't believe in getting the vaccine. I mean, largely, I'm talking about, like, I know I'm painting with a broad brush, but, like, I don't think it's a stretch to say that, like, the same people who are in favor of, like, banning access to gender-affirming care for minors are, like, probably also there's, like, a pretty big Venn diagram, like, overlap of them and anti-vaxxers. I'm sure there are, right?
Yeah.
And it's all rooted in, like, mistrust of institutions. Yeah. They don't trust institutions. They don't trust, public institutions, certainly. Mm-hmm. I think that's really kind of what it comes down to, is they don't trust anything related to the government. So, again, individualism versus, like, the common good, these are coming into conflict with each other. We don't have the same idea of what any of those things mean.
Honey, how do we fix it? Fix it, baby.
I really don't know. I really, really don't know. I get, like, I've been getting so, like, depressed and exhausted thinking about this because I don't know. Like, I think I know this probably sounds pat, but I think I really increasingly resent social media for driving everyone so far into these bubbles and echo chambers that, like, I think social media is the reason that all these anti-trans and anti-drag bills have been popping up all over the country, is because it's like monkey see, monkey do, and people are all reading this shit, like, on Twitter and Facebook, and they're all getting, you know, fed this, like, the algorithm is feeding them things that are designed to, like, maximize outrage and engagement, and it's, they're all coming from, like, the same exact news sources, and then Tucker Carlson covers it, and then it's like, I really do think, like, these, like, really toxic, sludgy, like, streams of information, like, and I mean, honestly, does it happen on both? Sure. Do we have to pay lip service to, like, it happens on both sides of the political aisle? Sure. I mean, in terms of, like, stoking outrage, but I think there's a much bigger affinity. There's an affinity for shit that's not true on one side because they reject the truth finding mechanisms that we have in place.
Right.
They don't believe in it. So, like, what do you do with people like that? It's like we're increasingly, like, speaking different. I feel like we're moving into different language families or something. Yeah. Like, it feels that extreme to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like people are now sort of that's why I am trying, and I know it might be infuriating to some people listening to this conversation, hearing me, like, try to characterize what these people are thinking, but it's the only way I can deal with it, because otherwise I feel like I'm parroting the same lines that progressives I know are parroting to each other, and we're talking to each other, and nobody gives a shit outside of our conversation, and it won't make any difference other than making both of us really upset, but we're not getting any farther in, like, counteracting what's going on. That's what it feels like to me. And my answer is, I don't fucking know. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I mean, like I said, we're not like, if it were like, you know, we're a baseball team and they're a baseball team, I might be like, let's figure out where their weaknesses are. Let's figure out what kind of pitches their batters can't hit. Let's, you know, let's figure out how to sort of manipulate their weaknesses. Let's figure out, you know, what can we do? But we're playing basketball and they were playing baseball and they just came out in basketball shorts with a basketball. Where it's like, I don't know what conversation we're having anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if having a conversation about, like, American values is really even useful, because, again, we're not talking about the same terms. Like, when I say freedom, I no longer mean the same thing that somebody else means, who means, like, I don't want there to be drag brunches at my kids' the public library my kids go to, you know, or, like, sorry, like, a drag queen story hour. I don't know. I can't bring myself into a fantasy world where I feel that that's an issue or a threat. I don't know how to engage with that conversation.
Totally. I think that's what's so infuriating. It's like, no one will make you. No one makes you go.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to be honest. I don't really like drag shows.
Yeah.
I like drag queens.
Talk that shit.
I've met a lot of drag queens that I love. I love being around them. I just don't really like drag shows, probably just because I want to be the star
and I want to be a drag queen. Yeah. Like, maybe that's it. But, like, I don't have to go. That's the great thing. I don't have to go. And you don't have to go either. And your kids don't have to go. And but, like, the idea that you're stripping other people of their rights, like, there's a very clear answer here.
Yeah.
And it's being so fucking ignored.
You know, like, what? Actually, I think you're right. I think, actually, when you talked about a solution, I think what you brought up at the beginning of this conversation is the key. And you just alluded to it again. Mm. I think it is framing this as an issue of personal autonomy.
Mm.
We're not asking the government to fund anything. We're not asking, you know, I mean, as far as, like, issues of the thorniest issues to me are issues related to public education. That's what scares the fuck out of me the most.
But I'm sure.
As far as these other issues, like, I feel like probably the medical community and, like, people who are, like, within that community and, you know, work with trans kids and, like, I feel like they'll be able to amass a defense against this where it will be an issue of medical autonomy. I'm sure, I think that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like on that front, it'll be a struggle, but I feel like there's a path forward for me with that.
Mm-hmm.
And with drag queens, like, you know, I think it was my sister who brought up, like, there needs to be some kind of a test case that ends up going to the Supreme Court having to do with a drag performance being banned.
Mm.
And even a conservative Supreme Court, I believe, will have to uphold it as a matter of free speech.
Yeah.
Unquestionably. I mean, to me, it's the medical stuff with the trans issues and trans kids is thornier just because I don't know anything about how you legislate shit like that. But I guess we're seeing it with abortion.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. But I don't know how that works. But with drag bands and stuff, to me, I mean, without question, it is an infringement of free speech. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sorry if y'all, isn't that the whole idea behind, like, the I don't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding is because I can't compel you to express yourself artistically in a way you don't want to?
Yes.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hypocritical. Oh, my God, it's so hypocritical. And I think it's just because it's, like, fucking lame and they don't know anybody who goes to drag shows and they're jealous because they live these, like, joyless, gray, depressing lives of, like, anyway, sorry, like, you know.
I was thinking
Sudoku and, like, getting in fights with their husbands. I don't know.
I wanted to talk about this because of banned books, too. So I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to know kind of what's the state of banned books and, you know, that there are, you know, what are the ways that we can show up for each other? And, like, where's the hope here? How do we, like, navigate this even with as the disillusionment is setting in, even as, like, this, it feels, you know, like, dystopian, even as it feels like suffocating, like, where are these pockets of goodness? And I was really excited to hear that little free libraries that are on the side of the road, they've, like, gone up by, like, 100%. Like, a whole bunch of people are starting their own little free libraries. And 87% of their members say that they share banned books.
That's awesome. I mean, that's so fucking cool. Also, like, I just feel like There have got to be, like, enlightened. Is there such a thing? Mm-hmm. There have to be enlightened people, like, far on the political right who are like, y'all, we should stop banning books. Like, this is a bad look. Right? Like, are there? There have to be. It's like, to me, it's, like, so clearly a fucking horrible bullshit idea.
I mean, yeah. I hope so. I don't know.
From free speech advocates. God damn it. Yes. I hate these people.
I
really do.
Yes. There's also,
I believe in it more than you. And I'm the, like, I'm the, you know, big government liberal over here. And I'm like, that's absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
For me, the line for what, like, shouldn't be published is so, I don't even know what you'd have to do to get to it. Like, honestly, I don't know. Like, I feel like when I'm a parent, I will trust myself to, like, at least within reason, like, until the kid is of, like, a certain age, like, have conversations with my kids, sort of, like, monitor what my kid is sort of, like, has access to and make sure it's nothing, like, ridiculously harmful. Like, I trust myself as being sort of a cheesecloth, you know?
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it would have to be for me to be like, that should not be allowed anywhere near a building where my child will be. It would have to be like bomb making instructions.
100%.
I
think that's what's so scary about it is, like, it's not about books. It's not about trans kids. It's not about
drag, it really is about eliminating a kind of person.
Yes. And yes. It feels, what they perceive to be like social degeneracy.
Yes, absolutely. It feels just a little genocide-y.
You know what
I mean? Like, it really feels like, wow, you really don't think that we have a right to exist.
Yes, exactly. And I think at the root of that is, once again, I know this is like my buzzword of the last few weeks, and it started, I feel like, on Easter, like around Easter. I went to the post office, and maybe I've just been in New England for too long. Because like in Texas, I wouldn't have batted an eyelash at this, but like this is secular New England. And the person behind the counter at the post office, speaking of government funded institution, was saying Happy Easter to everybody as they were leaving. And it really rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know why. Like, I'm Christian.
Yeah.
I grew up going to church. Like, I ride with Jesus, like 100% Lord and Savior. Like, I'm a Christian. But I was like, shut the fuck up. I just don't like the Christian nationalism thing. Same. And, like, the more I pay attention to it, the more, like, the fact that, like, I had to go on Facebook to get, like, a guide for what to tell, like, how to help my Muslim students during Ramadan. Like, understanding, like, my students might be, like, hungry or distracted or, like, do you know what I mean? Like, or, like, the fact that, like, Jewish holidays are never announced or discussed at all. Like, it just runs so deep.
Yes.
And I think it's at the core of what you're describing. It's absolutely, in terms of trying to, like, eliminate a particular kind of person. That's what it is.
I'm like, this is something that is so totally, what a great example of something that is, like, faith is such a personal, sacred experience.
Yes.
Like, it's celebrated in the community that you're a part of when you're with people, you know, in that way. But to force, that is forcing, like, someone, that is compelling somebody to do something.
It is.
To be like, I just think it's so harmful and cruel. And, like, I know it's a small little thing, but I feel like it's no skin off, you know, my back to, like, say happy holidays instead of, you know, Merry Christmas. And even that, like, no Jewish people are like, hey, I don't want to hear that.
You know what I mean?
Like, the only people that are saying that are people who are like, hey, what if we include lots of this could mean lots of things.
Yeah, and, like, you know, actually, you know what? That's the thing is, like, it bothers me precisely because it doesn't bother me.
Right.
Like, when she says Happy Easter to me, I'm like, I celebrate Easter, so that's great, thank you. But I'm like, how do you know all these other, speaking of, like, individualism versus republicanism, like, the founding principle above all of this country is escaping, like, religious, you know, the dominance of a particular religious orientation. That was, like, the Protestant thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Calvinists who sort of came here and settled on the shores of our very own Commonwealth here.
Well, colonized.
Yes, thank you for that. Yes, thank you.
Yes.
No, sorry. I'm really glad you said that. Like, I'm reflecting on it right now. But, like, that was sort of, like, a founding principle of our colonization was, like, you know, we're, like, escaping religious, you know, authority.
Mm-hmm.
And also that we don't want to be the aristocracy.
Yeah.
Like, the natural aristocracy where it's, like, you're either born into a rich family or you're not. Like, fuck that. I want individual opportunity here. I want the freedom to do what the fuck I want to do. Like, nobody gets to decide what I do or what my freedoms are or who I get to live for or what my autonomy is or what religion I follow or, like, any of that kind of stuff. Like, no, I reject that wholeheartedly, right? Like, I get to create what that means for me, but it feels like in a lot of different ways, like, we're trying to recreate some particular fantasy vision of what the United States should be with, like, the nuclear family and, you know, like, that we're, I don't know.
I just think when what happens, I think, especially for the, you know, the Christian conservatives looking, they look back as, like, at some point in the past, we had it right, you know? And I think you can't look back in the past and say that everyone at any, at every point in the, at everyone at specific points in the past, they were not treated equally. They did not have, you know, there was a very, it was a one kind of person that had access or equality. You know what I mean? Like that is, when you look backwards, you are looking backwards with that own, with your singular lens.
That's absolutely 100% true.
And I'm sure it was really great for people like you, you know? Yeah.
Oh, I'm confident. And I think... I just worry about, also, like, you know, with the trans kids, I worry about how, like, I just keep waiting for the fucking straw that's going to finally break the camel's back and get me to be like, okay, I have to get off Twitter. I can't take this anymore. Mm. And I think for me, it's getting really close to it with how Elon Musk has been interacting with this issue about, like, mm-hmm. saying that people who prescribe, what is it, the other day he said something like, people who, you know, provide gender affirming care to minors should be, like, jailed or something like that, where it's not just that, like, I find that to be a really abhorrent, you know, worldview. Like, I can't imagine that. It's also, to me, like, This like, just depressing feeling in my gut of that coming from, like, one of the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, you're talking about one of the, like, the richest, yeah. right? Somebody whose megaphone is fucking gigantic. And I think Joe Rogan started this. I think yeah. J.K. Rowling also really didn't help. Speaking of that, there's a new ContraPoints video out that I am so excited to watch.
Can't wait to watch.
That's called The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling.
I'm excited.
But, I mean, I think, and I don't know, like I said, I mean, you could probably tell from this conversation, like, I'm really bummed out about it, and I'm frustrated, mm-hmm. and I know mm-hmm. that I'm making a lot of, like, big, sweeping statements, but I think that's because I keep seeing the same kind of lack of nuance in, like, every conversation about this. Yeah. And it's frustrating for me as somebody who is, like, willing to have the nuanced conversation.
Sure.
Like, I am willing to even, you know, I don't know... I'm not trying to say there's, like, a compelling government interest that should force people to not misgender me. I'm not even saying that. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm not advocating for some additional layer of freedom or protection. I'm not advocating for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm saying that trans kids should get the same benefit of that everybody else does, which is that you stay the fuck out of it because it's none yes. of your business.
Yes.
And nobody is making you do anything. Nobody yes. is doing, like, a Clockwork Orange thing where you have to sit down at brunch while a drag queen twerks in front of your kids, like, holding your eyelids open. Like, yeah. nobody's doing that.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, don't fucking go. I just yes. don't understand it.
Yes. Yes. I want to table dance right now.
Yes.
And I want a neon sign that says table dancing.
Me too.
That's what I want.
Right, but you brought it all the way back around. So, like, I know I'm being cynical, and I had to, like, I can tell, too, you know, I've heard a few people, Aiden Dowling, who is, like, a trans influencer, an activist, I don't know, I feel like influencer is not the first description I should use for him, but anyway, activist, who's been, you know, doing trans activism for a really long time, posted something the other day and was like, I've never seen this level of vitriol online. Like, it's just mm-hmm. gotten to this fever pitch where it's just
right.
so much every single day. And I've heard a lot of other trans people online express that yeah. view. And, of course, I feel like it's always going to be worse online than it is just walking down the street. Right. But I also don't know that to be true.
Right. And didn't you say you were looking at something? It was, like, some Facebook group and, like, someone was asking about...
Oh! On the queer exchange group, Western yeah. Mass, yeah. Somebody was like, it was an anonymous poster, and they were like, I'm a physician, and I'm just wondering, does anybody have, like, a list of people who provide puberty blockers for young, you know, trans people? And, like, I commented, I was like, I would just really, I don't think any, this looks really sketchy to me, and I don't yeah. think anybody should answer it. Because, like, I listen to these people, I know how they think, I know what makes them tick, like, I pay attention, I listen to all kinds of media, I don't know how I stomach it, but, like, for me it's a coping mechanism, because if I don't understand something, it's a million times scarier to me.
Sure.
So I feel like I know how they think, I know what they're doing, they're on this, like, crusade to do, like, yeah. a gotcha
yeah.
with healthcare providers, yeah. you know, in a way that, like, nobody's going to do for their cis kids, like, nobody is interfering in those conversations. with physicians and medical professionals. Mm-hmm. Like, and once again, this is an example of just undermining our trust in institutions, because it also belies a total lack of faith in medicine.
Yeah, totally.
And in healthcare providers. Yep. Like, make the right decision. And, like, parents and mental health care professionals.
Yeah.
Like, this, like, sort of medical gatekeeping.
I wonder, I mean, I feel like there's really a direct line between the, like, the COVID vaccine and then, oh no, are we going to get flagged now?
I like how you said that with, like, sort of the same flat.
The vaccine,
bet you're fucking right.
To trans kids.
I bet you're absolutely right. That hasn't really care. Come out yet. Like, they haven't, because I can't really tell who the ire is drawn, who exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, with the COVID vaccine, I feel like the target of the hatred was the U.S.
government.
Like, forcing people to take it, as yes. I said, quote, unquote, quote, right. quote. And maybe the pharmaceutical companies, maybe a little bit. But it was yeah. mostly the government.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell where it's directed with, like, providing gender-affirming care for trans kids.
I think
like, they're not openly saying it about medical professionals yet.
No, I think they're saying that it's the culture. And I think
yes.
that's why
yes.
we're probably yes. feeling it more, is because it's like
yeah.
they're looking at people like you and me, and they're looking at people who are, you know, not that we're, like, very in the public eye or something, but, like, people that are, you know, entertainers or activists, and being like, you did this. You're doing this to my kids.
You know what? You're absolutely – I'm so glad. Sorry, I just interrupted you. You're 100% right. That's who they're blaming. It's the culture. That's why we feel attacked.
Yes.
And in fact, like, when we went to do that performance at the high school where I teach a dual enrollment class, I could just, like, feel this thing in the air from parents who were there, mm-hmm. like, not really wanting us to be visible there. I could
yeah,
feel it. It was
yeah.
palpable. And,
yes.
like, I feel like as a queer person, you know immediately when you're getting that kind of heat.
That
it's
look.
Like, you feel it. Yeah. It's something that straight people don't ever feel, because they're not ever subject to it.
Right.
But that, like, you don't belong here, I don't like what you do, on this, like, fundamental
really,
moral
like,
level.
I'm gonna cry. It's really scary. I feel like we're in Western Mass. You know, like, this is a safe, it feels safe almost everywhere. And I don't think we've, like, fully unpacked that performance or, like, what happened there, but we did, like, a little set at a high school, and it was, like, we were asked to sing there, and we thought it would be really cute. And so we did some Christmas songs and holiday songs, and, you know, I played She Keeps Me Warm, and I felt such hostility, mm-hmm. and, like,
not from the students.
No, of course not. But, well, and I mean, I think.
And you can say, sorry, yeah. I inserted my own.
No, but it's just like, I feel like when we get out of this place, when we get out of, it's like you forget that you're weird or something. Like, you forget that you're not, you know, you're not the dominant. I don't know. It's just like, it's so alarming. And it's not just, like, alarming in that, like, wow, I feel really
yeah.
different. It's that, like, people are looking at you like you're we're fucking in front of everyone.
Oh, exactly.
You know
yes,
what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's like, no, I'm going to hold your hand. And I feel like that's what is, like, straight people never have to have that kind of question of, like, is it safe to hold hands? Like, in what fucked up universe,
mm-hmm.
like, do two people that love each other and, like, I would die for you. And to have to, like, pause a minute and be like, we probably shouldn't kiss here.
Yeah.
Or, like, we
yeah.
probably should be really mindful of our affection for
yeah.
each other. Like,
yeah,
it is, like, no one should have to experience that. But, like, the idea that there are people like us and people in our community that are just, like, that are having that same experience, but as an individual
yeah.
being like, I'm trans in public and people are looking at me like I'm going to cause harm to
yes.
their family.
Yeah.
And, like, and for just existing, and for, like, for queer couples, like, just loving each other.
Yeah.
Like, what a cruel, cruel thing that is. Like, if you are listening to this and you're feeling, like, scared, or you're feeling like people are looking at you like you're some sort of criminal or monster, know that you're not.
No. And that's another thing I feel like there's an attempt to do, is, like, sow division within the queer community. Like, there's this just odious organization that I've seen spring up, and I'm not going to mention the name of it, that is, like, ostensibly gay people who are opposed to all of this stuff, you know? Mm. And you know what I'm talking about. Like, yeah. You know, minors having access to gender-affirming care is fucking stupid shit. And I think there's an attempt to sow division and to, like, be like, I'm gay, but I don't like all that stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to let you do that. Like, that struggle is my struggle. That community is my community. You're talking to me.
Yeah.
And you're talking to somebody who, like, yes, I had that experience. Like, it's been a while. It's been since I lived in Texas of, like, actually having, like, on multiple occasions, having people say, like, I told you about the guy who came up to me at a restaurant when I was after I kissed my girlfriend and was like, you can't do that in here. I'm sorry. Yeah. You can't do it. Or, like, that we were then outside of an antique store and the woman came outside after seeing us kiss on the sidewalk and said, if you're going to do that, you need to get away from my store. Like that, like the pain of that, I don't know how to describe that the pain and the loneliness and the feeling of alienation, and I never should have had to feel that way. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. Nobody, you shouldn't have had to feel that way. You shouldn't have had to feel like you had to, like, apologize to God. Like, and this is just a whole new avenue of abuse.
Yes.
For people. And, like, after the Kansas show, like, you and I had this conversation where I was like, I talked, just all the queer people who came up and talked to us afterwards, like, I feel like queer people are, like, so good and are so, like, used to just taking abuse and just taking shit and, like, not feeling like they belong anywhere. And that's why they make such a convenient political football for people, is because, like, we're not, like, aggressive, militant people. Like, we're used to this, and it's really depressing.
Yeah.
And they're looking for weak spots. It's like they're just poking around trying to see, like, where can I get you? Like, where are you vulnerable so that I can erase you from existing? And it's a really cynical, destructive enterprise because they're incapable of creating anything. All they have is, let's restore some mythical version of the past when people like you were too scared to kiss in public.
Totally.
But the genie's out of the bottle. I'm sorry, but, like, with technology the way it is and people's access to people's stories, people know that there's a better life. Queer people know there's a better life for them, and there are people speaking for them and telling their stories. So they're not going to be able to get away with this shit.
You're right.
So what I mean to say when I'm talking about all of it is I'm not being cynical. I'm saying I'm dissecting it only the way I am because it's a really clever political rhetorical game they're playing. And I feel like for me, what's most helpful for me is to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. And I know for a lot of people, it might not be helpful to think about that. But just know that there are people who are, like, trying to do that very thing.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out the rhetorical landscape, because I think that is important. But so I know it probably sounds the way I'm talking about it. It might sound really cynical, but, like, I think you and I agree on what's happening.
Yeah.
And, like, I think there are so many different angles we can go about sort of addressing this, but I think we just need to, like, persist until their point is politically illegitimate.
Yeah.
Until it's obsolete, and it will be soon, you know?
Yeah. I think it's just remaining vigilant. But I think that's the thing, is, like, how many people, especially, like, people who have intersecting identities of, like, you know, people, especially, like, Black queer people that are just, like, so fucking exhausted and just so sick of being pummeled over and over that, like, if their book isn't being banned for being Black, like, their book is going to be banned for it being queer. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it's just a constant thing. And I feel like Rachel McKibben's talked about on that episode about, like, passing the hot potato of grief, you know what I mean? Like, being able to pass to each other. But so I was trying to reflect of, like, how do we stay hopeful? And I think someone asked that at the talk of, like, what do we do? And I think I always have this answer. It's like, we have to find each other and we have to remain, like, we have to be in each other's corners.
Yeah.
Like, we just, you can't do this alone.
Yeah.
And I think what happened, I think, for gay marriage and I think for queer couples is like you have at least, you know, your partner, you know what I mean? And you can kind of navigate through that. But when it's like, when you're visibly queer, or like for someone who's trans or non-binary or who doesn't, you know, look or, you know, present as being cis or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah, presenting in the binary, I feel like it could be a lot more dangerous and isolating to be your you know, your true self.
And I also think it's a really good idea to, like, I don't, okay, this might be, this, some people might disagree with me on this. I am as loath as anyone else to be, like, super rah-rah patriotic because I find it to be a little cringe. However, I think there's something to be said for, like, reclaiming
patriotism,
freedom as an American value.
Mm.
Saying, like, my freedom and my personal individual autonomy actually trumps however uncomfortable you might be feeling. Like, I need to get that verb out of my vocabulary. Mm. Actually is more important than your feelings.
Yeah.
And so, like, my kids' access to gender-affirming care, that my right to that is actually more important than you, whatever, quote, concerns, unquote, you might have, right?
Totally.
Like, I almost feel like it might be a good idea to sort of, like, reclaim that as a liberal value, you know? Like, I'm talking about individual freedom, individual autonomy. Like, that's something that I have a right to. I have a right to make private medical decisions without your interference. Also, see also abortion.
Yes, 100%.
Damn.
Yes. I was also thinking of, like, another way to stay hopeful is to know that progress has come a long fucking way already, that queer people are hyper-visible right now, and it makes conservatives uncomfortable, but we have fought tooth and nail for the freedom to live in a way that is congruent with our identity. And there is much more to do, but, like, we have made excellent progress. And I think what is happening now is, like, it's stalling and it feels like it's backsliding.
Yes.
But we've come far. Like, progress has been made.
Yes.
And I feel like, let's just, if we just need to hold, we just need to batter, what is it? Batter down the hatches? Batter down the hatches.
I like that.
Batten down the hatches and just be like, we're going to remain united in this. Like, let's be very firm in our, we really need we need to elect some leaders, you know, like in this specific, in this fight, in this social, cultural fight.
Also, I would just love if some queer or trans conservative people, because I know they're out there, you know, just the ones who, like, just want to talk about, like, I don't know, fucking trickle-down economics or whatever, like, you know, honestly, just patently bad economic ideas they might have. I'll still be able, school choice, which I think is also objectively terrible, still, I would be happy to have that conversation with them. Please, like, talk to your people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, stand up for yourself. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel that way, too. We're like, I know queer people. I know queer conservative people. I don't understand why your political allegiance would be so strong that you feel like you can't part with them on something that actually is an assault on your part of your identity.
Yeah.
And people like you. And, like, people have fought and sweat and bled and cried for your rights. And you can still have a political ideology. Like, I don't think your ideology and your identity necessarily have to be tied to each other like that. Maybe this is just because I grew up in Texas and, like, I do know people that I disagree with profoundly on political issues, but who have not planted a flag in the sand on this culture war shit. Yeah. I think it's possible.
I think so too.
So I don't know. I don't know, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I think
the Liz Cheney's of the world, right?
Yeah. Just somebody. Yeah. Fuck. But we also have to be willing to hear that when it comes around. You know what I'm saying? And that's another issue. But anyway, I don't know. We did it. We did some of it.
Yeah. I think this was, like, I'm really glad we had this discussion. Do you want to just talk about our obsessions and read a poem?
Let's do that. What's your first obsession?
My first obsession is Lawrence fucking Kansas.
That was mine too.
Did you spell it out that way?
No, I just put the KU show.
Well, mine is about Lawrence.
Tell me everything that you think about LFK.
I really, really loved it there. It really reminded me of Fayetteville and when we visited University of Arkansas.
Yeah.
And it had just that same kind of vibe and just, like, people out walking and people riding their bikes and
sitting on their porches doing homework, college town things.
It was really, really cool. And then we went to, well, this was in Kansas City. We went to a, like, awesome store that had a ton of plus size outfits. Do you remember what it was called?
Meg recommended that place. I think it was called Retro Vixen.
Yeah, Retro Vixen. And it was just, it was a blast. And the shop clerk was amazing.
I was not even buying anything. And she was, when we left, I was like, the clothes were free. It was the entertainment we paid for. You were incredible.
Yes. I want to be best friends with her. Loved her. And I got this jumpsuit that I'm not even posting photos of because it's a red carpet jumpsuit and it won't be.
Retro Vixen.
Yeah. You can't know.
What an incredible. I cannot. If y'all are in anywhere near, I think it was in, shit, it was somewhere in Missouri. I just had it open. It was
Kansas City.
But it was not Kansas City. It was, I think it was right outside of Kansas City. Oh, wait, no, it was. Yeah, it was in Kansas City. Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. And I'm not going to edit this out because we're real and raw on this podcast. And you know what? Do I make mistakes every once in a while? I do.
And we had really, really good pizza from Domino's.
Oh, shit! I was not expecting it.
No.
It gave me a whole new faith in that pizza chain.
Yes. Oh, and we went to a great diner called the Lady Bird.
Lady Bird was fantastic. Yeah. And Lawrence just has such cool shit.
And Meg was just awesome, who brought us to KU, and their colleague Michael was incredible as well.
Oh my
God,
spending time with them
at the diner. It was just such a beautiful trip.
We met so many students, so many faculty. Love it. Mm-hmm. Cannot recommend LFK highly enough if y'all are in the area. Yes. I just love that area. It's so cool. Well, KU is my first obsession. So my second is I have loved watching the live stream of Coachella.
That was my second.
Was it really?
Yeah, Coachella Live.
It's just a blast. Like, do I necessarily feel like I have what it takes anymore, almost at age 40, to go to a music festival, to say nothing of paying for it? I don't know. But watching it on live stream is, I just like, on the Apple TV, get it on the good, going on the big TV. It's all the right camera angles. We got to see, this is embarrassing, but I am a huge Blink-182 fan.
Me too.
And seeing them come together and play with, like, Mark looking super healthy. And they sounded so tight, like, so good.
Yeah.
And they played some of my very favorite songs of theirs. And they're going on tour, and now I'm like, I kind of want to see them.
I want to see them.
And also, Travis's son is going to open for them in some of the shows.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that so cool?
That's fucking great.
Anyway, I just thought they sounded fantastic. And then we watched, like, Weirdly, the Chemical Brothers set was out of one of the coolest things visually I think maybe I've ever seen in my life.
It was so rad. I mean, the edible kicked in and it was just
exactly the right moment.
It was so fucking cool. And I'm like, oh yeah, for EDM or like for these DJs, like you have to have a really solid visual or else, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And it delivered. It told a story. And you have given me a whole new appreciation. You're like, these are actually not easy sounds to make. Like, this is not an easy kind of music to make.
Yes. And that's one of my other obsessions was this project I was working on that I can't really talk about, obviously. But it was a genre of music. It was EDM and hip hop. So my agent was like, we have this. She's my crossover agent. So she'll, like, bring me stuff for film and TV composition. And she called me up and she was like, okay, we have this project with so-and-so and it's a hip hop and EDM thing. And I was like, that's me. That's absolutely what I do.
You're like, that's my skill set. And I am an expert in Excel. Except you actually are that too.
No. But it was, I feel like I've always been like that where I say yes. And then I kind of like figure out what to do afterwards. But it was really, really cool challenge. Like, I feel like I learned a lot and it kind of forces me to learn as much as I can quickly and maybe not thoroughly, maybe not in a great way, but just learning how to make, you know, cool loops and just some of the synths that I was hearing and like the tools they were using for the Chemical Brothers set or for some of these EDM sets. I'm like, oh my God, I can recognize, like, that's, even if it's not an analog sound or an analog synth, it sounds close enough or it has really this like beefy warmth that like, I feel like my ear is tuning better. I feel like I'm understanding engineering a bit more, but I still have so much to learn. And if anybody has any suggestions for how to work on my audio engineering chops, I would love to.
Ooh, that's actually so a great thing to crowdsource.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I feel like I learned something new about music, and your super secret project that we can't talk about is, I wish I could say how fucking cool it is and how much I admire you for, like, and I don't think that's shameful. I think everybody has done that at some point where it's like, there's something maybe that's sort of aspirational for them, or like something in a job description that they can't quite do yet, but they know that if they need to, they can figure it out. Mm-hmm. Like I said that in a job interview before, where I've been like, I know that the job listing mentioned this. Now I haven't done that, but I'm a very quick learner and I can figure it out. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like a lot of people do that. And I think you know, sort of intrinsically when something is like within your grasp in terms of like, yeah, you know, if it comes to the showdown, I can figure out how to do that. I can, or I can ask people how to do that. Totally. Like I've got the people around me.
Yeah. Or I think what was great about it is like, I know that you can only know as much as you know in the moment. Yeah. And so like, I'm just going to do my best. And like, it's worth a shot. Like, yes. why not just try? And it also gives me such a deeper appreciation for people in that field. Like, I just don't think I really understood or had a lot of respect for EDM the way that I do now. And I'm like, oh, I'm hearing these nuances that I don't think I really picked up before. Right. Or like, I mean, I've always really loved Flume, you know, as a producer and a creator. But like, I didn't really like listening to some of his sounds now, they're just really rich and interesting. Mm. And the sound design is so cool.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wow. I don't know if I'm the right person for that, but I love it now. Like,
that's
I really
so
get it.
Cool. Yeah. And there are some interesting, some stuff at, speaking of, you know, getting a new appreciation for things. Like we watched Willow's set last night at Coachella, and I at first was like, I really want to make fun of this. So I was for a lot of it. Because like, I mean, you know, she's like the ultimate Nepo baby.
It was a little cheesy.
But then like, I don't know, Jaden came out with her and they were being really sweet to each other, and like it wasn't a great song, but then I was like, you know, I feel like there's a real, like, she's expressing, like, a real gratitude for being able to do this. Mm. And it was something that's, like, maybe not my favorite cup of tea, but it's just, like, fun to watch. And I don't know. I think it's opening your mind to genres and, you know, experiences with music that you might not otherwise.
Totally.
That's the Coachella way, and it's the Mary Lambert way. But anyway, I also have to share this, too, is our friend Laura, it's actually my brother's really good friend Laura, is at Coachella. And I messaged her, and I was like, who have been your favorite so far? And she was like, Rosalia was like a transcendent experience. She was like, it was like somebody just like pouring open their heart to you and showing you like her whole life story on stage. She was like, she's so good. And then she was like, Blondie was also unreal. And I know you've seen Blondie before and you can attest to this. And then she was like, I would rather get waterboarded than ever see Blackpink again.
That's so unfair. I really like Blackpink. I think they're cool.
And then, of course, Frank Ocean's set is generating all this buzz, they didn't live stream it. And they also didn't live stream Bjork, who was on stage with a full orchestra.
So sad to not see that.
And I actually tweeted at the Coachella person at their Twitter account, and I was like, are there any Weekend 2 sets that are not going to be live streamed so I can prepare not to be disappointed?
Good,
like,
it's good.
Out of nowhere, they're just going to be like, oh, Phineas's set is just not going to be live streamed. Like, that would be a bummer.
That would be very sad.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. We
thank
deserve
you
it.
Thank you for agreeing. I don't really know if I'm that excited about Phineas. It's just the first one I pulled out of my ass. What's your next obsession?
My last one is I have just been thinking about youth poetry a lot. I did a workshop for students.
It was so – they loved it.
And then I did a workshop at the University of Kansas for talking about, you know, the power of poetry and writing through trauma and having, you know – poetry be this like really helpful vessel. I mean, this is what art therapy is all about, right? Like as this vessel for, you know, contextualizing your pain and trauma and like how powerful and moving and life-giving and life-saving that was for me, having discovered spoken word when I was 18 and at a time that I was really like on my last limb. Like I was done. I was ready to go. I mean, I was like, I was doing everything as recklessly as possible, just hoping that I would die.
Just ready to, to check out. Yeah.
And I think when I found Youth Speak Seattle, which was a youth organization that is still up. There's still slams. It's run by a dear friend
of mine will. I'm going to try to be on the board.
I love that you're going to get involved.
You Speak Seattle is, and they, and there's so many great poets that have come out of that scene. Hollis also came out of that scene. Rose McAleese, Corbin Lewis. There's like just so many great people. Danny Sherrard. Tara Hardy was there. You know, I feel like there's just so many great poets in there. And
I think you really inspired the students at my school to start a team.
I hoped so. And I, cause I looked in Western Massachusetts or in Massachusetts to see what the, you know, yeah, in Western Mass where the, if there was any youth spoken word stuff. And all I found was that they have a recitation, competition, but it's like you have to, it's other people's poems that you have to read. Uh-huh. And I just think like, oh, well that's, I mean, that's like doing theater, which is great.
Which
and
is good.
Theater's awesome. And, you know, that's cool.
But it's different.
But what, being able to write about your own life and your own struggles and the own your pain or a breakup or falling in love or, you know, like.
That's totally like a different
your parents,
thing.
Like, it is so liberating to be able to name shit that happened to you and to share it with people who are also sharing their hearts with you. It was so fucking profound for me. So I feel like youth poetry is so, like, valuable that I feel this renewed interest in, like, just, like, put, you know, just uplifting it and putting, you know, a lens on it as much as possible.
Really part of your calling. Like, I really think so. And, like, I just, like, I think what you enable people to do is really powerful. And, like, what I saw you do with my students, like, especially because, I mean, they don't have similar opportunities to be vulnerable with me, but I know them really well. And like, I saw a whole, I learned this whole other dimension of them because you enabled that kind of vulnerability. Like it changed them. And I just think what you're doing is really profound and really important. And it also just seems so easy and like life-giving for you.
It seems
like it's easy as breathing, which I think is always a sign that you're doing something.
That's why I'm like, I shouldn't pursue this because it's too easy. Like,
right.
It's not EDM.
Yeah,
like
right.
I'm supposed to be doing EDM. But I think like there are so many different youth organizations across the country that you should, if you are, you know, in that age range, or even if you're not, even if you're just like interested in spoken word as an art form or like want to express yourself in some way and you're like, I don't really have any talent, like who cares? Just like go, just be excited and like learn and be with the community. And they, like, so many of these organizations have free writing circles you can go to. Those writing circles were essential to my survival.
Yeah,
like it was so important for me to do. And this is all to say that Brave New Voices is this, it's this international youth poetry competition, and it is out of control. It's
really?
Like, it's like going to a college for just a weekend where everybody is as as weird and perfect as you are.
Fuck yeah.
And there's crying and you fall in love and you make friends that you'll have forever. It is just like, it's unbelievable. It's like radical camp.
So like 10 out of 10, you would recommend?
100%. It's out of this world.
I think that's incredible. Honestly, I really do think that you're going to end up involved in it in some capacity. Maybe not that specifically. That's You Speaks, right?
Brave New Voices. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. You Speaks is there's You Speaks, I think, in the Bay Area as well. And I think there's a couple more. I think there's also You Speaks Hawaii. And I think like, just it's
but
just
mostly
so,
left, mostly West Coast.
Yes, but it's just there's so many different cities have different organizations. There's one in Boston as well. So like especially I think if you're a trans kid, if you're somebody who's like feeling like you don't have a voice, like these organizations and being able to write about it is like a way that we survive, and this is how the arts this is how we make it.
Yes.
You know, like this is why our culture is so rich.
Yeah.
Is because of queer people being relentlessly
vulnerable and
joyful.
Yes.
And celebrating themselves and saying like I do deserve to be heard.
Well said, honey. Yeah. Beautifully put.
I'm in.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that.
Any other obsessions you have?
My one last one is, I can't really say much about it, but I am 100 years behind schedule, but I just finished like binge watching Severance over the course of 2 days. Mm-hmm.
on Apple TV Plus, and I just can't wait to make Mary watch it. It was just like the most mind-bending, infuriating. Like, it was one of those things where it like really weirdly affected my mood for like an entire day.
Yeah, you were kind of off.
Yes. Have you ever watched a show that's done that to you? Where it's like, but I guess maybe it doesn't really do that to you as much.
Okay, I agreed, but no.
I'm so sensitive to stuff that like that's why I didn't really like Black Mirror all that much. I'd watch an episode of it and it would like make me feel weird for like the whole day. So Severance made me feel really weird, but then it got really gripping, and my sister was like, when you watch the last episode of that season, you're going to want to fucking scream at the TV, and I can't tell anybody or why. I can't tell you why, but it was really beautifully done. I'm just excited to watch it with you.
Okay, I'm excited to watch it from, like, a lens of just, like, it being artistic.
Right. You know, you mean I'm instead of, like, feeling a sense of existential dread?
Yeah.
Say dread, it's just weird. It's a really fascinating concept. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of those ideas for a show where you hear it and you're like, fuck, why didn't I think of that? Like, you know, like you wish you'd thought of it because it's just so brilliant. But if anybody else watches it, let me know in the comments what you think. You want to share poems?
I do. I'm so excited to share this poem.
Please, you share your poem first, please.
Okay. Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
Well, this is actually a poem that I shared with your class.
Oh my gosh, the one that you, the video.
Yes. So part of when I do that little workshop, I share a couple of poems from other poets I like that the idea of like that workshop is about like building a different future or like building your own sort of story instead of, you know, responding to something that's been assigned to you, like sort of imagining the possibility of your future. Anyway, so this is a poem that I had never heard before, so I was really glad that like I got the opportunity to speak to your class because I found this poem and it blew my mind, and I just love this. I love this woman.
Now I know the one, and I'm so excited about this. Sorry, that was a really unnecessary thing to add. But
no. So this poem is called "This Is Not a Humanizing Poem" by Suhaima Manzoor Khan. Mm. Some poems force you to write them, the way sirens force their way through window panes in the night, and you can't shut out the news even when you try. Write a humanizing poem. My pen and paper goad me. Show them how wrong their preconceptions are. Be relatable. Write something upbeat for a change. Crack a smile. Tell them how you also cry at the end of Toy Story 3. And you're just as capable of bantering about the weather and the post office queue like everyone. You have no idea how to make the perfect amount of pasta still. Feed them stories of stoic humor. Make a reference to childhood, tell an anecdote about being frugal, mention the X factor, be domestic, successful, add layers, tell them you know brown boys who cry about the sides of Assads, Amirs, and Hassans they don't know, the complex inner worlds of Sumayyas and Aishas, tell them comedies as well as tragedies, how full of life we are, how full of love. But no, I put my pen down. I will not let this poem force me to write it because it's not the poem I want to write. It is the poem I have been reduced to, reduced to proving my life is human because it is relatable, valuable because it is recognizable. But good GCSEs, family and childhood memories are not the only things that count as a life. Living is. So this will not be a Muslims are like us poem. I refuse to be respectable. Instead, love us when we're lazy. Love us when we're poor. Love us in our back-to-backs, council estates, depressed, unwashed, and weeping. Love us high as kites, unemployed, joyriding, time-wasting, failing at school. Love us filthy, without the right color passports, without the right sounding English. Love us silent, unapologizing, shopping in Poundland, skiving off school, homeless, unsure, sometimes violent. Love us when we aren't athletes, when we don't bake cake, when we don't offer our homes or free taxi rides after the event, when we're wretched, suicidal, naked, and contributing nothing. Love us then. Because if you need me to prove my humanity, I'm not the one that's not human. when my mother texts me too after BBC News alerts. Mm-hmm. Are you safe? Let me know you're home, okay? She means safe from the incident, yes, but also safe from the after effects. Mm. So sometimes I wonder which of the days of the week might I count as liberal, and which moments of forehead to the ground am I conservative? Mm-hmm. I wonder if when you buy bombs, there's a clear difference between the deadly ones that kill and the heroic ones that scatter democracy. I wonder if it should rather be guilty until proven innocent. How come we kill in the name of saving lives? How come we illegally detain in the name of maintaining the law? I put my pen away. I can't write it. I can't write. I won't write it. Is this radical? Am I radical? Because there is nowhere else left to exist now.
Oh, that's what a beautiful poem. What a beautiful coda to our conversation now. Because I'm like, that's how I think a lot of queer and trans people feel now too. Is like, am I radical? Because this is the only place I can be now. This is the only place where I can exist. Is in the realm of the radical, right? Yeah.
It's such a beautiful poem.
It really is.
Really, I'm so excited to get her book. Oh yeah, she has a book. She has a couple books. She has a website. I meant to share all of this. She has a podcast called Breaking Binaries.
Cool.
And I can't wait to listen to it. It sounds really fucking cool.
That's badass. I love her as a writer. I love that poem.
Obviously look at our show notes and you can look up her work as well and follow her. And I'm so excited to see her stuff too.
Absolutely love that. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
It might've been better for me to go first. I have a really sad poem.
That's good. I'm ready to cry.
It's a short poem. But it's by a poet named Anthony Robinson, and it's a poem called 88 Days. And just this little nugget of a poem about grief just really resonated with me.
Mm.
88 days ago, my father died, and the world is still broken, open like a geode, too dazzling to apprehend, too terrible to come home to. These are mountains furred over with wildness where goats eat with abandon. Mm. These are more than metaphors for absence or removal, more than half completed histories. We don't want to live here anymore, but we have no other home. Here in the wild oregano, we can't touch the wind. We can't even see each other.
Oh my God. Oh, but it's so beautiful.
I know. I know. And I cried reading it silently, and now I feel like I'm going to cry reading it out loud again. I think it's so beautiful.
It really is. I feel like we're in the humanness of it, you know? Like, we're in a very human predicament. We're having human feelings, and this is life. Like, this is where we are, and we keep fighting tooth and nail because we have to.
Yeah.
And grief will continue to be there, and pain will continue to be there. Death will exist, and so will weddings, and so will babies.
Yeah.
And so will, like, unlikely animal friendships.
Yeah, you know, it's true, like, yeah.
It all exists all at once, and to close your eyes to the darkness of it, to the isolation of it, is also to close your eyes to the painting and the beauty.
Yeah.
And we have to stay here for that.
Yeah, there's something about what you're just saying right now, like how this poem says, the world is still broken open like a geode, too dazzling to apprehend,
ugh,
too terrible to come home to.
Ugh. Isn't this beautiful? Isn't poetry so beautiful?
It really is. It truly is.
I feel like it's, I don't,
there's, it's, I mean, it's like no other mode of expression. It's just, it's incredible what it can, and like song lyrics too, I feel that way. I mean, which are just fucking poetry.
Yeah, no, music, I mean, music serves that purpose as well, but just being able to arrange words in a way that makes them feel so profound and so specific to an experience or a feeling, like, that's its own kind of magic.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's being able to speak in a bunch of different languages all at once. And I think
I think it's okay that we're hurting. I think it's okay that it's not in a bow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to keep going. We're going to record another episode next time.
Yeah.
And we may cry again.
Yes, exactly. And it's okay.
Yeah. And it's okay to cry. Crying is good for you.
Thank you, everybody.
We love you so much.
That just means that I'm saving also my terrible things that I need y'all to forgive me for next time.
Yeah, we skipped our segment today. I'm a little tired.
But I cannot wait for you to hear them. I mean, just that's my little teaser for next time. I did some terrible things, and I'm going to confess. I'm going to go to the break room if any of y'all have watched Severance.
We love y'all. Please take care of yourselves. Know that this is just, we're going to get through this together, and to stay vigilant and to stay hopeful, and we're here with you. We've got your back.
Love y'all.
Bye.